I believe in my powers.
I believe in my powers.
I believe in the powers of my teammates.
I believe in the powers of my teammates.
I trust in my powers.
I trust in my powers.
I trust in the powers of my teammates.
I trust in the powers of my teammates.
Somebody get this big walking carpet out of my way.
Look, okay, just get any blunt objects together, all right? Get cornered, bash him in the head. That seems to work out.
I mean, what are we, a team? No. We're a chemical mixture that makes chaos.
Gentlemen, I'm Agent Carter. I supervise all operations for this division.
The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
And wow! True, wow!
Angels of love!
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show.
The 2015-16 Skiffy and Fanny Janus episode. Looking back, looking forward.
I'm Sean.
I'm Julia.
I'm Paul.
I'm Mike.
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Jen.
And they're all super excited because we've got new music.
Yay!
Yes!
You really outdid yourself this time, Sean.
I really did. The irony being
I've
that the music
heard anything
is not done
like
yet.
It.
Yeah, never. Literally.
I have never heard anything like it.
Yeah, they're all being super sarcastic because the music's not actually done at the time of this recording. So they've been under orders to pretend to be excited.
Yep.
Yay. So this episode is pretty straightforward. We're going to talk about some of the stuff we loved from last year, talk about some of the stuff we're anticipating for this year, and talk about what the hell this year's going to be all about. Because this year's not a theme year. No themes, guys. Not exciting.
How are we going to survive?
We're not the Byzantine Empire. We don't have our themes.
The previous 2 years we've had themes. We had the World SF Tour. We had women and non-binary in SF last year. This year, no theme. If we have a theme, it's going to be listener suggestion year because we're just not going to do that. Part of that is stuff that we've talked about before off podcast, which is it's a lot of work. And also, we've done themes for 2 darn years. Maybe this year we should just get to do whatever the hell we want. And also, because I'm going to be super busy this year, and I can't do all of the work to set up a theme because I'll explode.
And I feel like also one of the things that went into this was discussions with listeners who expressed some concerns that by only doing these things as themes, we were kind of giving the impression that maybe we didn't care about like world SF outside of our theme year, which is not true. We're always open to world SF and women and non-binary and all sorts of awesome different kinds of SF.
Absolutely. Yeah. So hopefully this year will just be kind of a smorgasbord of lots of fun stuff. That's kind of the hope. Yay.
I'm the only person who lives in a state that has smorgasbords in the real sense, I can support that.
Wonderful. So why don't we just then dive into our favorite things from 2015? There are plenty of them. The rule was everybody got 3 things, and they could be anything. They could have been a book, a comic, a movie. They could have been a weird feeling they had while they were eating Cheetos at a convention. That all counted. So we'll start with you, Julia. What were some of the things that you loved from 2015?
First of all, I'm going to go with a book. One book that came out in 2015 that I was really excited about and was great was Zen Cho's first novel, Sorcerer to the Crown, which is Regency England with magic, sort of in the vein of Susanna Clarke's Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, but a much more fluffy, fun adventure than that in certain ways, but also with like an all main character cast of people of color. And in Susanna Clarke's book, there's one character that's a person of color, but everybody else is white. In this, it's like really focused on the fact that this world contains a lot of different people and that magic works for all sorts of people in different ways. And they interact with it differently because societies do different things and that it's not all just like rich white people, which is very cool. It's very cool. I'm making it sound like it's a lot more focused on race and things like that than it is, because there's that stuff in it, but the main thrust of it is a really fun adventure with lots of witty banter and dragons. So that's awesome, and I super recommend it. Second, movies. I was really excited for 2015 because it's the first year I can remember in a long time that I actually wanted to go to the movie theater multiple times and see movies that were new. And my thing here is the movie theater experience itself, not one particular movie. Movies that I remember seeing in the theater and enjoying include Jupiter Ascending, which is ridiculous, but I really enjoyed seeing it. Mad Max Fury Road, which was awesome, and I saw it with a bunch of friends and in a packed theater, and that was great. The Martian, which similarly was also awesome, and then also Star Wars The Force Awakens. So really solid year for science fiction movies that I saw in the movie theater. Yay. And finally, the last thing that I will mention is my favorite science fiction and fantasy related podcast that started in 2015 for Fake Lore, which is Caitlin Paxson and Miguel Foote, Canadian and American couple who each time they do an episode, they take one trope that's based on a current pop culture thing. So like their most recent one was haunted houses, which they were focusing on Crimson Peak. And they delve into sort of the history of whatever that trope is in pop culture, because McGill is a filmmaker who's into film and knows a lot of film history. And then like folklore, because Caitlin has a degree in folklore. And then at the end, they decide whether the thing that they've been discussing, the trope in the pop culture thing, is based on folklore or fake lore. And it is super great. They're both very smart, and it's also a lot of fun. So those are three things that I loved in 2015.
Awesome. As a folklorist, awesome. I feel like I need to be listening to that podcast like yesterday.
Yeah, I need to.
Very cool.
Cool.
Yes, you should absolutely. I recommend everybody does that. It's fakelore.thebackrow.com.
Awesome. Awesome. We'll make sure that's in the show notes too. All right, Paul, what about you? What were some of your favorite things from 2015?
Okay, I'll start off. I have two books and a more nebulous thing, because I'm going to be inspired by Julia to go nebulous. Okay, so the first book I want to bring up is my second favorite book of 2015, and that would be Laura Ann Gilman's Silver on the Road. I've been reading Laura Ann Gilman's work for some time now. I've generally preferred her secondary world fantasy, although she hasn't written much of it. She wrote a trilogy, The Vinart War, some years back, but she's mostly stuck to urban fantasy, which is not really entirely my jam. I try to get into it, but it's a harder road to sell. But Silver on the Road is alternate history, secondary, quasi-secondary world, U.S., flintlock, weird Western fantasy, set in the West where a being that is the devil, isn't the devil, we're not sure, owns most of the West, and people come and try to make their way in the early 19th century in a West that's mostly run by him. And it's mainly the story of Izzy. Izzy is a young woman who wants to work for the devil. She's grown up under his roof, as it were, because she was sold there by her parents, and now she wants to be the devil's right hand. And that's a really hard road to hoe. It has interesting magic, a strong set of strong characters. Izzy, Gabriel, is the person that the devil ropes into, basically guiding her into her journey. Strange doings in the Wild West. Wonderful landscapes and a really good coming of age character story. I really think that Laura Ann Gilman's writing has leveled up considerably with this novel, and I can't wait to see what happens next. My next thing is my favorite novel of 2015, and be no surprise to anybody who's listened to me for in 10 minutes, and that would be Kate Elliott's Court of Fives. I'm picking this over her epic fantasy, because this is a turn into YA for her, and I think it makes her a stronger novel for her to go into a YA epic fantasy rather than straight epic fantasy, as she also has done in 2015. Court of Fives is set in an alternate world, which is very reminiscent of Ptolemaic Egypt, which is not a part of history that you generally see taken and put into fantasy. This is kind of part of my whole Outside the Great Wall of Europe thing, that like this is not your typical Western medieval fantasy, although she did start an epic fantasy that way some years back. But this is Near Eastern fantasy. It's strange tombs, weird magic, a strong protagonist, a plot-based kind of Little Women meets Count of Monte Cristo in Ptolemaic Egypt with a little bit of Hunger Games thrown in. And I devoured it avidly. And spoiler, she's sent me an arc of the sequel, and I can't wait to get into it and see where Jess's story goes next. And the third favorite thing I liked of 2015 was a convention, and that was Convergence. And the reason why I like Convergence, which is one of my two home cons, is that most of the Skiffy and Fandy crew was there this year, and it was great to see you guys and for us to actually almost completely unite for a change.
Aww.
To do good.
Yay.
I generally have problems at conventions. Mike Underwood can attest to this because of my shyness and my withdrawn and fears and all that stuff. But 2015's Convergence was the exception to that generally painful process.
All right, Paul. All right. Well, why don't we jump to you, Mike? What about you?
Well, I think I'm contractually and morally obligated to say that my number one favorite thing was that I got married. Yay!
Yay!
So that was very,
very
fun.
Very good.
We had two receptions, one in the Midwest and one in California, because we have chunks of family and friends who can't really travel very easily. So it was a ton of work, but we got to have a lot of fun. And one of them was at a children's museum with lots of fun, wacky bits. And we had dancing, and there was cupcakes and lightsaber fights. And it was really delightful. And I'm quite enjoying married life. And I will always remember 2015 for that. The Convergence and many other happy things. In terms of favorite media, I'm going to focus mostly on things we haven't talked about on the podcast. So one is The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, which is a comic series from Marvel. Volume 1 came out, I think, all in the year. And that's written by Ryan North, line art by Erica Henderson, covers by Erica Henderson, color art interior by Rico Renzi, and lettering by Clayton Cowles. To try and get everybody in there. And the thing about Squirrel Girl is that from her creation, she's totally ridiculous. It's this character with squirrel-based powers, a la Spider-Man. But the way that she's been written, she just always wins, even in totally ridiculous situations. And the way this manifests in the comic is, one, she wins fights that in other comics she probably wouldn't, but it's awesome. Two is she has an incredibly strong self-image because she's not like a skinny waif ninja girl. And another thing that I really love about it is how fun and zany it is, because it really takes the range of what you'd expect out of the Marvel Universe, which is often lighter than some parts of DC, but they go back and forth with each other. And it takes the lighter parts of the Marvel Universe and goes even brighter. And it's wacky. She has a talking squirrel as her best companion. She's in college. It's really fun. And it inspires me almost more than any other comic to want to write comics. And another thing about the character that is really cool for me is that she resolves a lot of situations and challenges with villains, not just by punching them, by actually listening to what they want out of things. There's one episode within the volume where she meets somebody who's like, I'm a giant hippo guy and all I can do is wreck things. And she's like, well, have you thought about working in demolition? And she kind of directs him to getting a job where he can actually make enough money to live, because that's all he really wanted. So the way that she regards the people she runs into as people and actually tries to help them instead of just punching all of her problems is really cool. And I could not love it more. My third thing is going to be the TV show Gallivant on ABC, which is utterly ridiculous. It is a musical fantasy parody satire. In the second season, which started this year, it's doing a lot of fun, like musicals pastiche. And I love how ridiculous and unselfconscious it is. It doesn't apologize for being totally over the top. There are some problematic bits that people have identified, and I definitely acknowledge those. The mode of comedy that it uses is definitely the mode of someone from a previous generation. It's more like boomer humor in some of the ways that it uses kind of identity politics and things like that. But it has ridiculously fun things like a group of pirates who are stranded on land. So they're like, we are the lords of the sea. Well, technically next to the sea, we're the lords of the sea or something. And I just love it because it's totally bonkers. And those are my three things.
Yay.
Nice. Sorry. I gotta just step in and say yes to all of that about Gallivant. I've been having so much fun watching it this year that it makes me happier than pretty much anything that has ever existed on television.
Yeah, and I love how that there are these other musicals that are popping back up on TV.
Yeah.
And it's really fun.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome. All right, Rachel, it's time for you to take it over. What have you got for us?
Okay, so for my stuff I loved in 2015, I
don't read a lot of current fiction, which is like my greatest shame, but I gotta actually mention two books that I did read the year they came out, and they were both amazing. Lagoon by Nnedi Okorafor is amazing, and The Fifth Season by N.K. Jemisin. Both of those books just blew me away entirely, and I actually listened to both of them as audiobooks, and the audiobooks on both of them are incredibly high quality. And especially Lagoon, because they used multiple different voices in there, and they're wonderful. And then 2015 was an absolutely amazing year for science fiction movies, which, you know, I'm going to cheat and I'm actually going to mention a couple really quick, because there was The Force Awakens, which makes me so happy. And Mad Max Fury Road, which, if there's any justice in the universe, which we know there's not, it should win every Academy Award ever. And Ex Machina was amazing. And then I really loved Crimson Peak, and enough that we did an entire episode of Skiffy and Fanti without Sean for it, because I loved that movie so much. So it was a really super awesome year for in the movies. And of course The Martian, but, you know. We have to save Matt Damon again. And then the TV, there was Daredevil on Netflix, and that was just incredible. So yeah, I 2015 was very good.
Well, and the other one?
I have actually not watched Jessica Jones yet, okay, because I don't have the emotional strength.
That's fair.
Because I have heard like how like heavy that is, and I want to watch it because it looks really good, but at the same time I'm like, I don't know if I can mentally handle this right now.
I can understand that. It is really heavy. It's pretty intense, and I could totally understand that much. And Daredevil is, I agree, completely awesome.
It's weird when you're like, Daredevil is like the lighter alternative.
Right?
Like, oh, he just gets the shit beaten out of him instead of, you know, completely brain screwed. And I think Jessica Jones is also the reason I've been putting it off, and I need to watch it because, if nothing else, I want to, you know, I like, so for the upcoming Hugos, I want to nominate, there's a Daredevil episode I want to nominate, and I'm sure there's a Jessica Jones episode that deserves to be nominated for short form, so I need to sit down and watch it. But when everyone's been talking about, like, you know, it's got all these really good, well-developed themes about, you know, basically surviving rape and all that, and I'm like, oh my god, this sounds like it's going to be really tough to watch, especially because it is really good.
Yeah, I could totally get that. Yeah. Well, all right. Well, why don't we then? We got to go to Jen. Jen's got
you
some things, right?
You have to go to me. Yeah, Jen has a couple things.
Yeah, we're obligated. It's like
had
in
a little
the contract.
Bit of time, second half of this year, enjoying unemployment. So I actually got some reading done, which is amazing, and has been very nice. So I'm gonna go with hard science fiction for me, because it's been a while since I've been able to just kind of absorb some. So I have to go with Aurora by Kim Stanley Robinson. It's been a while since a hard sci-fi has made me cry for at least 100 pages of a book, but that's literally what I did for the last at least 70 plus an additional 30 throughout the book. It's kind of amazing. I will probably be nominating it for a Hugo. And way better than some of the previous ones that I've read of his in the past couple years. It's just beautiful, beautiful story. It focuses the parts particularly that focus on the ship itself and its, questions of identity and consciousness, are kind of spectacular. So highly recommend it. Then I got to read also Ecofraxia by Peter Watts, which I was looking forward to through almost the entire year, and finally sat down and was like, oh my god, this is amazing. I love Blind Sight, so was really excited about that and enjoyed it. And then I'm blanking. Oh, and then, of course, Neal Stephenson's Seven Eves. It's interesting because Seven Eves and Aurora actually deal with some of the same things while being wildly different, so it was kind of nice to see two deep space hard science fictions coming out in the same year. Granted, there's many, many more, but those are two sort of blockbuster authors. So nice to read. So that's the first part. I read a bunch of other amazing books just in the last like 2 months because I finally have a good library, which has been really, really satisfying. So second, obviously the movies, we've all mentioned the movies, but I have to say part of the reason that I love these films and part of the reason that I'm actually really excited about some of the 2016 films as well, but particularly for 2015, the number of strong female characters in our films that were leading the films, obviously Mad Max, Star Wars, and many, many more that I'm totally blanking on right at this second, but particularly Mad Max is still, I'm super glad that it got nominated for as many Oscars as it did, although not enough still, but we'll get there. And then last, I'm going to go sort of a blanket, although I'm going to specify one thing. Television this year, I think we can all agree, was pretty freaking amazing for science fiction and fantasy. The CW continues to have a lot of really fun shows. They're not necessarily great shows, although one of them is. If you're not watching The 100 yet, what is wrong with you? Why aren't you watching it? Please start immediately. It's amazing how well it tackles some really interesting issues of a post-apocalyptic world, how to survive, what you have to do to survive. The characters are all fascinating and have good individual story arcs, which is amazing for a cast as large as it is. Clark, the lead female, is still, will always be probably one of my favorite characters in a television series ever. She's amazing. She's complicated. All of the characters are complicated, which is a joy to watch week after week. But watching some of these characters make really, really difficult, brutal decisions on a station like the CW, which I don't think anybody ever expected would turn to things like The 100, it's stupendous, and I'm excited to see more out of that channel. And they keep putting stuff up there for us to enjoy, so I'm excited about that. And obviously, Netflix is doing a freaking phenomenal job, as is Amazon with The Man in the High Castle, which I'm also really enjoying. So, great year for television, whatever form you are consuming it in. So, yeah, that's my 2015.
Wow, good, some good stuff. And I agree, television has been pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So Golden, I need to watch Man in the High Castle. Too, but
yes, you do.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. Okay.
But watch The 100 first, because it's better.
Yes, my master, I shall do thy bidding. okay, well, I guess I should go to mine. So pretty much all the movies I had on my list have already been mentioned. So I may skip mostly movies. Except I will mention that It Follows, which I saw in 2015, but technically came out in 2014, I thought was possibly one of the best horror films of the last decade. It's really, really good. I also really, really liked Room and Carol, which are not science fiction or fantasy films by any stretch, but are contain some of the best performances by anybody in a long time. They're some really incredible movies. And Rooney Mara and Carol is utterly mesmerizing. It's hard to not just focus on her in that film. She's just adorable, and her performance is really, really exceptional. And if you've not seen Carol, I really, really recommend seeing it. It's really, really good. But in terms of books, we haven't mentioned it, but it's one that I really, really loved from last year, which was Signal to Noise by Silvia Moreno Garcia. It's a really interesting sort of magical realist type story, or I guess you could consider it a fantasy if you wanted to, involving sort of growing up, the kind of coming of age narrative in Mexico City. I learned a very fun fact during the interview that Mexico City is literally sinking, which I found to be one of the most utterly exciting historical facts like ever. Just the idea that an entire city might actually sink into the ground is something that Californians have been wishing would finally just happen, given that everybody keeps talking about half California breaking off into the ocean. But
Palm Springs, actually, is already
sinking. Oh, is it already sinking? Yeah, but nobody cares about Palm Springs. So
no, nobody does.
As long as...
Golf players do.
No, well, nobody likes golf.
Except not a real for golf sport. Players, exactly.
Yeah. as long as the wine doesn't fall out, we're good. So if you've not read Signal to Noise, I do think it's one of the best books of last year, and it's pretty much guaranteed to be on my Hugo nomination list because it's just really, really freaking good. The other thing we've not mentioned, but it's something that I still really enjoy and is the one comic that if you ask me what is the best comic of the last 2 years, which is Ms. Marvel by G. Willow Wilson, Sana Amanat, Stephen Wacker, and Adrian Alfana. I think that's everybody that's involved in the comic. We all know the comic at this point, first generation Muslim American growing up in America and gets superpowers and is super geeky and cool. I still think one of the best comics of the last few years was the one where she meets Wolverine for the first time and basically has the squee fest every one of us would have if we met Wolverine.
Yes.
And it goes about as well as you'd expect. but of course, that was from the last cycle of them, so that's not from this cycle. This cycle is really good as well. I just love the story. I love the character. And I really, 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 really hope that when we get Carol Danvers in Captain Marvel in the movie, that the sequence that comes after the credits gives us Ms. Marvel somehow. Because I would just love that. Even if we never get that film, just having that as an Easter egg would make me so happy because Ms. Marvel's wonderful. Podcast that's really good is a podcast we've mentioned before, which is Doorway to the Hidden World, which is by a person who's been on this show before now via recording, Kevin Lux, a very wonderful individual who knows all the truth about the history of the U.S. government, has been exposing the fact that Delaware doesn't exist and other kinds of things, and did really excellent work last year. Of course, Julia knows Jeffrey, who also knows presumably where Kevin Lux is at this moment, but, you know, if Kevin's listening, thanks
Jeffrey
for the
does
joint.
Not know where Kevin Lux is.
Oh, he doesn't. Oh, okay. So does he just get
no,
the recordings like
Kevin,
in a mail?
Kevin just like sends him recordings somehow and then he puts them together.
Wow.
It's like video drum.
Kevin is paranoid. He wouldn't want Jeffrey to know where he was at all. And I think Jeffrey's actually relieved about that because Jeffrey, I think, finds Kevin a little bit freaky.
Well, the question I have for Jeffrey is why does he keep releasing the recordings? Because it's clear that he doesn't edit them very much, right?
I've talked to Jeffrey about this before, and he's pretty tight-lipped about it. But as far as I know, there was something that happened. I think when Jeffrey was studying abroad in Spain, and he got into some trouble, and Kevin actually saved him. So, like, whatever trouble Jeffrey was in, which I don't know the details, Kevin got him out of that trouble. So now Jeffrey owes Kevin kind of a big favor.
It's like
which
Chewbacca
is why he
life
puts
debt.
The show out. Yeah, basically. And okay. So that's why he keeps putting the show out, but he also finds Kevin to be completely creepy, so he's not gonna... I think that's where some of the editing things come with.
Okay, so the real question like, I wonder know, now is whether we're gonna get that story. Because it sounds like there's a really big conspiracy involving Spain.
I don't think so, because I don't think that Jeffrey would like to tell that story at all. So I don't imagine that we're going to hear it.
Well, there's – who knows? But it is
a
wonderful,
out there.
Wonderful podcast. So yay. And the last thing I did want to mention is that all of 2015 has been a wonderful experience because I've spent it revealing the true story of Mike Underwood via Twitter. And some things that people have not known about Mike are things that I've been revealing, and these are utterly and totally true. And so it's just been a fun experience. I know Mike doesn't appreciate it as much because some of the things that from his past he doesn't want people to know about, but I think it's really important that people know things such as Mike last week became the emperor of the Great Baltimore and Greater Nebraska Empire. Which is really important, given that it's an utterly insignificant empire. But that's, you know, it takes a lot of work to get there, Mike. And I'm glad that people now know about your history. So,
well, in an age of dangerous demagogues, someone has to rise up to meet the challenge.
Agreed. So that's basically all my stuff for 2015, guys. So now is the time when we switch over. We start talking about all the stuff we're looking forward to this year. Well, not all the stuff. Some of the stuff, because if we went through all the stuff, we would literally just be reading IO9 lists of movies that are coming out this year. So Julia, why don't you tell us some of the things you are really looking forward to this year, whatever they may be, books, media, experiences. Maybe you're going to go to the moon. I don't know.
Okay, so In 2016, I'm looking forward to lots of stuff. On the book front, I'm looking forward to Ghost Talkers by Mary Robinette Kowal and A Star-Touched Queen by Roshani Choksi. I'm probably pronouncing her name wrong, for which I apologize. We published a short story by her in Strange Horizons last year called The Wives of Azhar, which was great, so I'm super excited to read her first novel. And Borderline by Michelle Baker. I met Michelle in 2014 at LawnCon, and she told me about this book, and I've been waiting since then, and it comes out in March, so that's super exciting. So those three books are the three that I chose out of the pile. In short fiction, I'm super looking forward to The Starlit Wood, which is an anthology co-edited by Dominic Parisian and Nava Wolf of new fairy tales by all sorts of awesome people, including Sophia Samatar, Theodore Goss, Charlie Jane Anders, Amal Mohtar. Just all of the people in the book are awesome writers, and I can't wait to read what they come up with. And there is a short story collection called The Assimilated Cuban's Guide to Quantum Santeria by Carlos Hernandez, which is also fabulous. I was lucky enough to read that early so I could blurb it, and I'm super excited that that should be coming out right about now and everybody else in the world can read it because it is awesome. And Sean, you especially, since you mentioned liking Signal to Noise, I would absolutely recommend The Assimilated Cuban's Guide to Quantum Centuria to you. In editing, last year I left Strange Horizons, which was bittersweet, but now it's really exciting because I get to read the short stories with like fresh eyes and I haven't seen them before, which is very exciting. And I just picked up a new editing gig, so I'm editing the poetry and reprints for Uncanny Magazine, and that is also super exciting, and it's a very different thing, but very fun, so that's something I'm excited for this year. And I'm still continuing my year's best YA speculative fiction series with Elisa Krasenstein, which means I'm reading all the short fiction all the time, which is super great. And then on the experiences front, Paul mentioned Convergence last year. That was definitely up there in my top experiences for 2015 as well. In 2016, I am super looking forward to going to ICFA again and swimming in the pool in Florida in March, which is fantastic. Cause like, you go to ICFA and you like swim in the pool and have all these awesome conversations with cool people about science fiction, and it's basically paradise. So I can't wait for that. And the other big experience that I'm looking forward to, which will come right after ICFA, is in 2014, Amal Mohtar got me into a game called The Walk through Six to Start. And then in 2015, we started doing Zombies Run. And now in 2016, we are both signed up for the second ever virtual race through Zombies Run. So I am... Yay! That's so exciting! Woo! So I'm super excited for that. I'm going to try to see if I can actually do 10K this time instead of 5K. I've always done 5K races before, but maybe I can get there. That's super exciting. High five. So that's all the stuff that I have for 2016. I mean, I could go on forever, but that's what I'm going to stop with.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, Paul.
Okay.
You wanna tell us what you got?
I'll tell you. I want to second Julia's mention of Ghost Talkers. I really like Mary Robinette Kowal's historical fantasy, and now we have a new world, new setup, new magic. So I'm really excited for that. Guy Gavriel Kay has a new book coming out this year, Children of Earth and Sky. I really like his historical fantasies. He really goes deep in bringing worlds that aren't quite ours, but look a lot like them to life. And this one's supposed to be set in the Renaissance Venice, which is a really exciting setting. I can't wait to see what he does with it, because Venice is one of the most beautiful cities in the world, and I really need to go there one of these days. And I've really loved the novels that I've read that are set in alternate Venices. So I want to see what he does with that. Madeline Ashby has a new book, a long delayed book called Company Town, which, I mean, Ashby science fiction is sharp, futuristic. She really thought a lot about the singularity and post-human AI and all these sorts of things. And she's got a fascinating setting coming up with a gigantic oil rig in Canadian waters with artificial persons and a mystery. So that sounds really exciting to me. There's tons of sequels coming out to books I loved this last year coming out this year. Fran Wilde's Cloudbound is coming out, which is a sequel to Updraft, which is one of my favorite novels of the year. Bradley Beaulieu's Of Sand and Malice Made is a sequel to 12 Kings and Sharakai, which I really liked last year. V.E. Schwab's A Gathering of Shadows is a sequel to A Darker Shade of Magic, which I really liked last year as well. Martha Wells, I've already read Martha Wells' The Edge of World. Spoilers, guys. And she continues the story of the Roxura, and I really, really liked it. Now I want to read the sequel to The Edge of World, even though it's nowhere near out yet. Lois McCaster Bujold has Gentleman Jolie and the Red Queen, which is, yay, another book set in the Volkazigan universe with Cordelia as a main character for the first time in years. How could this not be awesome? I really liked when she turned her sights on Ivan in Captain War Patrol's Alliance. I think she sometimes does better when Miles isn't the focus, so I want to see what she does with Cordelia as the focus for the first time in a long time. And I'll mention one movie, a movie that I didn't think was ever going to come out, but we're going to get a sequel to Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon coming at the end of February with Michelle Yeoh and a few other new characters. And I'm hoping this will be like The Force Awakens and kind of a transferring of changing of the guard from the old characters to some new characters. And I have great hopes for what Netflix will do with this. So we'll see. Hopefully 2016 will be a fascinating and fun-filled genre year.
I love Michelle Yeoh. She's wonderful.
Yeah, definitely plus one to the Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon sequel and to Fran Wilde.
Awesome, awesome. All right, Mike, what have you got for us?
So for my first one, I'm just going to say the Star Wars franchise in general. I've been a kind of an on and off Star Wars fan for basically my whole life. And with Rebels and the new Marvel Star Wars comics and Force Awakens, I've gotten way back into tons of Star Wars squee. So I want to watch more Rebels, read more Star Wars comics. I want to do some Star Wars gaming if I can between Battlefront and tabletop RPGs. And I am very tentatively excited for Rogue One, the first Star Wars anthology film coming late this year. I think that the plot that's set up for it could be very interesting in terms of shifting into a different subgenre tone of something that's more kind of gritty and like Dirty Dozen-esque in terms of what they have to do. I am hoping that it will not just fill in a little bit of story that we all knew has to happen, but that in the unfolding of the story, we really care about the characters, that they continue to round out the world in terms of diversity and inclusion. And I'm hoping that it will continue to raise the bar in terms of the strength of the storytelling, not just in characterization, but maybe in plotting as well. So that's Star Wars for one. A comic that I have been reading and continually adore, and I'm kind of surprised that it's even in the world, is Bitch Planet, co-created by Kelly Sue DeConnick and Valentin Delandro, with guest artists and wonderful color artists and letterers who I don't have their name on top of on my list right now. I apologize to them. It's a really great book from front to back. It has excellent essays and great letter section, so it's really the kind of book that you want to follow month to month and then pick up the collections. The short premise for people who haven't seen it is that it's like a 70s-style girls in prison exploitation film meets The Handmaid's Tale, and it's super violent, but super feminist, and top-to-down, bottom-to-top, intersectional, very intentionally. And the co-creators, DeConnick and Delandro, with their collaborators, have been incredibly deliberate and careful about the way that they put forward this really terrible circumstance and the way that the women in it deal with it. So it is a great, like, F yeah kind of feminist comic, and I highly recommend it to anyone who's interested in SF, and especially if you're interested in intersectional feminism in speculative fiction. My last pick is going to be The Last Days of New Paris by China Mieville, which is a new novel slated for August 9th. I've been a really big Mieville fan, especially his Baslag books. And I haven't read a couple of his latest ones, but I'm hoping to get back into it with Last Days of New Paris, which, according to a sub-blurb on IO9, takes place in an alternate 1940 after the city falls to the Germans. One combatant in the city constructs a surrealist bomb and accidentally uses it, transforming the city into a, quote, violent weaponized dream logic, which sounds like Mieville at his most inventively terrifying and intriguing. So those are my three picks.
Mieville is a good pick. He has two books coming out this year, by the way.
Yep, The Census Taker, which I haven't gotten yet.
Yeah, that one I think is already out at the time of this recording, because I think it came out earlier this month. So really exciting that we're getting a whole crap ton of new Mieville books. So yay.
Uncork our brains.
All right, Rachel, what about you?
All right, so Paul already mentioned Gentleman Joel and the Red Queen, but I have to mention it to you because I'm such a huge Forkosigan fan, and I'm so excited. And Cordelia, Yeah, I've actually just been, I have a friend who's reading the entire series fresh,
Wow.
And has she's completely unspoiled, and she's currently in Mirror Dance. And me and all of my other Vorkosigan friends are just sitting there and like popcorning, being like, oh, just keep going. Just keep going. It's great. It gets worse. But anyway, so I'm really excited about that. I'm really excited about The Obelisk Gate, which is the sequel or the second book in the fifth season, if I'm remembering correctly. And then for comics, I'm actually really excited about the Poe Dameron comic that's going to be coming out starting in April, because I love that character so much. And the Shattered Empire comic was really, really good. Like, I whipped through that super fast because it was so good. And then this year is, like, kind of, it's looking to be another pretty good year for sci-fi movies, though it's a lot of, like, sequels and remakes. But I'm actually super, super excited about Captain America Civil War, which kind of surprises me because initially I wasn't, but then The Winter Soldier made me believe, and now the Captain America movies are pretty much becoming my favorite out of the Marvel movies. I'm super excited about... I'm super excited about the new Ghostbusters, even though it's a remake, but it's a remake with women, and it looks really cool.
And
I'm
the cast. So excited the about cast it. Yes, is great.
The cast looks so... Like, every still I see from this movie, my heart just, like... is full of so much joy. And then I'm also, despite the fact that I'm pretty sure it's going to be terrible, I'm excited about the Warcraft movie.
Aww.
I'm pretty sure it's going to be awful, but like all the stills I've seen out of that too is like, you know, they show there's like the cork board or whatever it is in Stormwind, and it's got like the Hogger thing and a Darkmoon Fairflyer on it, and I'm super geeked about that. And then actually a couple kind of smaller movies that look really neat that haven't gotten quite as much attention. Passengers looks really good. That's an independent film. It's about like a dude who, or there's a colony ship, and one guy gets woken up 60 years early, and he gets super lonely and decides to wake up someone else, which is kind of a dick move if you ask me, but we'll see how that goes. I think, you know, Chris Pine can sell it. And Synchronicity also looks really, really good. So I'm excited about those, and I'm tentative. I'm sort of having mixed feelings about Kubo and the Two Strings, because on one hand, it looks really cool. It's a like a stop motion animation film, but on the other hand, it's based entirely off of Japanese folklore, and the cast is pretty damn white, which bothers me a lot.
Problematic.
So yeah. Oh, and experience wise. One thing that I want to mention that I'm super looking forward to this year is I'm editing my first anthology. So,
indeed, you are.
I'm actually on the cusp of releasing the first Reject Apocalypse, where I'm going to send out all the first round rejections, and I'm sort of filled with excitement and guilt.
You just got to learn, like Nick Mamatas, to just really take like gross pleasure in rejecting people.
Oh God! See, there's part of me that's like, yes, you know, I will eject things from the slush pile, and then there's part of me that's like, I have become the thing that I hate the most.
You have become Death Destroyer of Worlds.
Exactly. Yes. Like, I have become Editor Crusher of Dreams.
You're also collapsing the waveform of waiting and uncertainty.
It's true.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Tell the truth, Thraith, though, what you're most excited about most of all this year is Gods of Egypt.
Oh, God!
is that the one you're watching for... Are they paying you? Did people pay you to see that?
No. So Gods of Egypt is the first suffering for charity for this year because it looks absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
And if people donate $500 to... I've got either Act for Change, which is a UK-based organization that promotes underrepresented artists, or I've got a couple of theater companies that were recommended to me. There's the Black Shakespeare Company, and then there's Classics in Color, which is based out of New York, and both do classic theater with very diverse casts. If $500 get donated across those groups, I have to go see Gods of Egypt, and it looks like that is a movie that I, ever since the first trailer of it I saw, I was like, this movie is terrible. This movie will fill me with rage.
So is it Gerard Butler is supposed to be an Egyptian god?
among other people. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And
Jaime Lannister.
Yeah, it's just white Europe is Egypt.
No, it's basically the only thing whiter than Egypt in this movie is the Oscars.
Oh, snap.
Ouch. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember who's the guy that plays Horace, because to me he just looks like a hobo, and I'm just...
Isn't it Jaime Lannister?
Jaime Lannister.
Okay, that is Jaime Lannister, because I haven't watched Game of Thrones, so yeah. So hobo Jaime Lannister is Horace, and it looks awful.
God.
Yeah.
It's just,
And everyone sounds sort of faintly British because it's a fantasy film, and it's, yeah.
That's going to be one we're going to have to do for torture cinema. You just
know
it.
Oh, God.
Oh man, no, I don't know if we need to do that. I'm not sure
about giving them money.
Yeah,
I didn't suggest giving them money.
Yeah, Sean, you seem to have no scruples around that, but not all of us do.
It'll be on Netflix one day.
That still gives them money.
I will say the urge to not give a terrible movie money should not stop you from donating for the suffering for charity, because the $7 I spend on a movie ticket is nothing compared to $500 going to like Act for Change or
for sure.
Fair.
Yeah.
Fair. All right, Jen, what about you? What have you got for us?
Oh, it's my turn. Okay, so book-wise, I haven't really been paying attention at all, but I am excited to read Midnight Taxi Tango by Daniel Jose Older. I loved Half Resurrection Blues. It's been a while since I've read a book that rhythmically felt like the music that the series is named after, which is the rumba in this case. So that was a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to the second book. It already came out earlier this month, and I've heard pretty good things about it. It's got, instead of just focusing on the main character from the first series, it has two women in addition, all POC, and that's always refreshing. And I loved his Shadow Shaper YA novel last year, so... looking forward to that. And then, since I haven't read anything by Levi Tadar in a while, I'm looking forward to his book that's coming out this year, Central Station. It sounds interesting. Exodus to Space Stations by Humanity, and looking forward to that. Movies. Not looking forward to Captain America, which I'm worried about, but I loved the first two, so I don't know why I'm not looking forward to it. So instead, I'm looking forward to Doctor Strange, mostly because I love looking at the weirdness that is Benedict Cumberbatch. And I'll watch pretty much anything that Tilda Swinton is in, even if it is problematic that she's playing an ancient Asian character. So that's my movie front, even though there's a lot of movies coming out this year that look like half interesting, but I'm just not excited yet. However, there's some YA movies, films coming out this year that I am really excited about. Kubo is a little bit too problematic for me to go that way again. But Moana, the new Disney film that's coming out later this year.
Ah, you took mine.
Absolutely beautiful. And it's a Disney musical, which we haven't had in a while.
To go to what Rachel was concerned about for the other film, this actually features
Pacific
Islander people, or at least people descended from Pacific Islanders.
They cast an actual Hawaiian actress as the lead character, and it's got The Rock.
Who is, I believe, Samoan.
Yes, he is.
Yeah. Samoan. So, yeah, super, it's amazing that for all the crap that we give Disney, they do some good things.
I think something's this film is actually a brave choice on their part.
It is a very brave choice on their part. Yeah. And because they're throwing all of that into another musical. And like I said, they haven't done that in a while.
Well, and think of all the criticism they could possibly get for this.
Yes.
You know,
but they're doing
really
it right.
Dive into it and say, let's do it. And like, let's give it an honest effort at trying to do like a traditional Disney film, but doing South Pacific mythologies and folklore. And yeah, it's, I hope it's good. I really do.
So do I.
I'm hoping that it is at least as good as Lilo and Stitch.
Yes.
Fair.
Oh,
fair.
Love that movie. Okay. And then in addition, I'm also looking forward to the Little Prince adaptation that's coming out in March. It just, the trailer is gorgeous. And so I'm pretty excited about that. It's not a straight up adaptation. So keep that in mind when watching the trailer. But it looks really good and gorgeous. And I love beautiful films. And then lastly is Monster's Call, which I did not read the book that it's based on. I think it's Patrick Ness wrote the novel. But it looks like a great kids movie. Not for kids, but it's one of those complicated, sort of old school children's stories about a little boy who deals with his mom's cancer by talking to monsters.
That one looks good.
Heartbreaking, and it's going to be tough to watch, but it looks amazing at the same time. So, the other Marvels that I'm looking forward to. Deadpool.
Whee!
I'm looking. Forward
I've already
to Deadpool.
Got my tickets to see it.
Yeah, I'm just night. A little bit excited. So yeah, that's going to be fun, and rated R, yay. Yes.
God, could That's you actually make a Deadpool movie that wasn't rated R?
It would be terrible.
You could, but it would be terrible, yeah.
It would be not Deadpool. They've been pushing for R the whole time, but they had pushback from the studio to do PG-13. And people, this is the weird part, like, parent groups are asking them to make a PG-13 version of it or something like that. Which is just bizarre.
Well, I think it's probably because they're like, oh, the kids are going to go see it anyway because it's Deadpool and everyone loves Deadpool.
And you're like,
because,
you know what? You're just going to have freaking deal with some swear words and really raunchy language. So, yay! Ha! I'm taking my kids to it. Whatever.
I sort of want to see the middleman version of it where, like, everything is bleeped out.
That would be amazing.
Or they do, like, middleman swearing. Like when when he starts to swear in his own way, and it's like not anything that we recognize as swear words, but then when you think about it, it's really, really unfortunate.
That will be fun, to say the least.
That would kind of be awesome.
Yes. Okay. There we have it.
Okay. Well, I guess I gotta go. I can't not talk about Moana again because.
Go ahead.
It also happens to have Taika Waititi, I hope I'm saying his name correctly, who may be known to other genre fans for his work on What We Do in the Shadows, which is possibly one of the greatest mockumentaries ever made. It's about vampires in New Zealand. Yeah. And it is freaking hilarious. I still will find myself pausing to go, we're werewolves, not swearwolves. Which is just such a dorky line, but it's just brilliant. And Taika, apparently, he was Viago in the movie. And I don't know if he had writing credits on it, but he certainly has writing credits on Moana. So I'm just really excited by that. So some of the other things that I've got going on. So a lot of stuff has already been mentioned. The books I'm looking forward to this year is Yoon-Ha Lee's Night Fox Gambit. Because she apparently has a novel coming out, and if you just stick Yoon-Ha Lee's name on something, I will read it, because I love her work. It's just really, really beautiful and very poetic in the writing, and I'm sure this book is going to be no different. I believe it's her first novel.
We've talked to her about her short stories, but yeah, this is her first novel.
And I cannot wait. It's going to be awesome. I'm also excited because Silvia Moreno-Garcia has a new book coming out this year called Certain Dark Things. And I'm basically going to be a fan of her work until I'm incapable of being a fan of anything, which usually occurs after death.
I just want to jump in here and say that I believe Yoon-Ha Lee's pronouns are he, him.
Oh, is it? Oh. Okay. Oh. I apologize then for not knowing that. So, okay.
That's fine. I just thought that we should definitely correct that and acknowledge that going forward.
Okay. That's fair. Okay. Movie-wise, so some of the stuff that has already been mentioned. However, we are also getting a Matt Damon love fest this year, which has just been called Born 5. I don't know what the actual title is going to be, but it's...
Does he have to be rescued again?
I think it's just going to be, like, 2 hours of Matt Damon punching people and just looking like the sexiest man that's ever existed.
Why? Why?
I love Matt Damon.
The Martian was my favorite.
He's beautiful in that too.
Year, so,
if he Second. Yeah, he's wonderful in that, and he's gonna be wonderful in Born 5, and I can't wait to watch it because it's Matt Damon, and I love him. Also, I was really excited to learn. So, like, I actually don't give a crap about Spider-Man as a character, but the new Spider-Man title this year is apparently Miles Morales, and they're just calling it Spider-Man. And I'm going to read the hell out of that because I actually like Miles Morales. I don't care about Peter Parker, who I just find just insufferable as a character and just don't care. But Miles Morales, I will read that. That looks really exciting. Also, Independence Day Resurgence, which I know Will Smith's not in it, but I don't care. It's the trailer hooked me because it gave us a speech and I just felt like the tears coming on and I just felt like...
Like, it was I wanted a good trailer.
And I just want to pull out my American flag and like wave it and be like, yeah, yeah.
You can tell David's not on this podcast.
Oh, I know, because he's Canadian. He doesn't appreciate it. That's okay. It's brilliant. That trailer, though, you got to understand, like, you got to, like, yeah, okay, I get it. You, like, the speech is, like, insufferable because it's super American. But you got, like, if you're feeling patriotic, like, you hear that trailer and you're going, yeah, yeah, go America, Bill Paxton, who's, like, 800 years old now. It looks like he's drunk too much. But that's okay. Because he's going to be president again.
Do you mean Bill Pullman?
Whatever. Bill Paxton, Bill Pullman, they're all the same. They both look like they drink too much.
It reminds me of the commercials in Starship Troopers. I'm just saying.
It does.
Would you like to know more?
Would you like to know more? I would love Kill another Starship bugs. Troopers. Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. And then the only other things just to mention is that I am going to be at a bunch of conventions this year, which is cool. So I will get to see Julia at ICFA in a couple months, which is going to be awesome. I'll be at Convergence.
I've got to clear out to my floor.
Yep, you're going to have to clear out your floor, Paul. And I think I'm going to be at Oasis in Florida this year because I think I'm going to be a guest, which is cool. And two other things, which I have to mention because I'm not going to take three. I am getting my PhD this year.
Yay!
I say I'm getting it because I have to finish it because I'm pretty sure the university would be like, no, you can't come here for a seventh year. You just need to go away. Not because they hate me, but because the university has no money.
It's time.
It's time also for me to just freaking graduate and get done with this. So I may or may not be jobless come August, which could be exciting. Not the jobless part, but yeah. Anyway, and the other
thing. I'm enjoying it.
Being jobless, it is fun, right? I mean, if everyone could be jobless, you know, like you, Jen, I mean, it really would be the most exciting world to live in. Yeah.
Post-scarcity.
Yeah, that's how you ought to live, right? You are in Colorado, which isn't too bad. And
I am. I live a block away from Patrick Hester. I am going to be stealing his Hugo.
You live near Patrick Hester? Seriously?
I live about a block away from him.
Wow.
I still haven't been able to manage to hang out with him yet because life and stress.
You should,
but yeah.
You should like go outside his house and just like stand there. For, like,
no,
an
you
hour.
Should go outside his house with a boombox and play In Your Eye.
That would be wonderful.
Super tempting. So.
And then when he comes out, be like, Sean sent me.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool. I'll probably be hanging out with him a little bit at, you know, there's like quite a few cons here in Denver area. So yeah. So
that'd
be
cool.
And I am actually, I should have mentioned before, the last thing I am very excited about this year is the fact that I am unemployed. I am planning on staying that way, hopefully, for quite a while. I hope to be on the podcast.
Are you going to write a novel or something? Why?
No, just life.
Oh.
Is working out that way.
Oh, okay.
And it's a good thing. So,
it's good. Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah, no. All right. It is. We just made a huge life change. I don't know.
You moved to Colorado, kind of a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of a lot going on. So, but it is going to give me more time to be on the podcast, which is
that is good. And it will also give you time to learn how to appreciate snakes and take pictures with them for me.
No, that's not happening. Sorry.
I'll pay you $5. $25.
That's tempting.
Okay.
You should go to Animal Kingdom, Sean, because I hear that recently a snake dropped out of a tree and bit a small boy, and now their family is suing Disney World because they claim that the snake biting the boy caused his grandmother to have a fatal heart attack.
That's ridiculous.
It is. It does seem like an extremely frivolous sort of lawsuit. Like, she apparently had a heart attack 2 days later, so that's I'm highly suspicious of the snake being the cause. But
and this was in Florida, right?
But if you want to get up close with snakes in Florida, this was a native Florida snake and not actually like a captivity snake from Animal Kingdom. It was just a Florida snake that happened to be in a tree at Disney World. So you should totally go to Animal Kingdom and you could have a snake drop on you.
Well, as it turns out, I have actually found a snake within a theme park before. Just last year in December when I went to Universal Studios and found a snake slithering around the park grounds and caught it and had to find it a new place to live in the middle of a theme park, which is a lot more difficult than you would imagine. So
that's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Little ringneck snake. Nothing big deal. I posted a Twitter picture. It was cool. So
rein it back in. Rein it back.
All right. All right. Okay. Just quick thing. Cause, Rachel didn't mention it. We are starting another podcast kind of thing, which I think is just going to be a monthly thing where we're reading the Star Wars Expanded Universe.
And oh, yes, yes.
Tentatively being called Thrawn and On and On.
Yes! I think that is the perfect title.
It is a perfect title. That's pretty amazing. I think it's going to stay that. I don't think there's any objection to it changing.
Because the EU definitely goes on.
And on. Yeah, and we are starting with, of course, the first of the Thrawn trilogy, Heir to the Empire, by Timothy Zahn. So it's going to be really cool, and we're going to be recording that probably soon-ish. So, yeah, and that's that. That's it. That's everything. I had more than three. Hey. I'm sorry.
I think we all had more than three, except for Mike, who is the only person on this podcast that believes in following rules.
That's true.
I mostly but he is follow an emperor. The rules. It's
mostly he is the law.
So basically, Mike is our only lawful good character. I would be looking forward to the new Judge Dredd TV show if it was coming out this year, but I believe it's next year.
I don't even think it's actually coming out. Yeah. Okay, but we got to wrap. We got to wrap because it is the afternoon and all of us need to go eat food and whatnot.
I'm so hungry.
Yeah. So if you'd like to suggest a topic this year, please do so. You can go to skiffyandfanny.com, and there's at the top, there's little thing that says suggest a topic. Just send something. We're really interested to hear what anybody would like us to cover, any topic. If there's a guest that we've never had on that you think would be great, cool. Let us know. We're happy to try new things and have new people on. So, and on that note, thanks very much for listening to the show in the last year, and thanks to all of my lovely people for being on this show with me.
Yay.
It's wonderful.
How about that new music?
And on the blog.
Yeah, and how about that new music? It's smashing.
You're welcome, citizen.
All right, guys. On that note, awkward ending. And
bye, everybody.
Scene. Our intro and outro music comes from Nocturnia by Psychedelic Pedestrian. You can find out more about them on freemusicarchive.org, including the full version of the song. We obviously made some edits to the song, including sound effects and, of course, shortening the length. You can also support us by going to patreon.com/skiffyandfanty. If you'd like to send us a suggestion, you can do so at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com. You can also go to our website, skiffyandfanty.com, and check out the little suggested topic form at the top there. You can also just send us emails. You can also find us on Twitter at skiffyandfanty or on Facebook at The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Just search for us on there. Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you next time.